family, once again, I'm so glad that you're joining us today for our special topic on men and domestic violence. But before we go any further, make sure you like and click the subscribe button. Now let's dive into it.
Wake up, everybody. Let's elevate your mind. Live your life without limits. No more wasting time. Don't forget to stay focused while continuing to stay on the grind. Keep your vision real tight. Then your future be bright until the finish line.
Welcome, family, to another episode of Living Your Life Without Limits. My name is Shannon Jackson, your resident host, also known as the People's Nurse. And today I'm excited that I have a special guest with me today, none other than marriage family therapist Eugene Porter. And we're going to be talking about men and domestic violence. Mr. Porter, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm fine. And thank you for inviting me. It's an honor to be here.
It is my honor and privilege to have you on this show. This is such an important topic, and I'll tell you why I wanted to have this discussion on the show is because, one, I think that there's not enough awareness surrounding men that are involved in domestic assault and violence, not only from men and men relationships, but men and women and other sexual or non-sexual attacks. So I thought it was important that I bring you on. I know you have a lot of experience in this area, and for us to unpack this. So one of the things that was very alarming for me as I open up the questions for you, when I was doing some research on this subject matter, one of the things that was said is that according to the Office of National Statistics, there's been 757,000 men fell victims to domestic violence in 2019 and 2020. I thought, wow,
right.
That is some alarming numbers.
Right.
So talk to us about this subject matter. And first of all, open it up with why is it such a stigma around this issue with men and domestic assault?
Right. Yeah, and those numbers are numbers that most people are unaware of. And when they think about with domestic violence, they think about men as perpetrators of of domestic violence.
Correct.
The issue of men as victims, the stigma around that, I want to talk about it in relation to cultural expectations around gender. Okay. And I want to put current cultural expectations around gender into a broader context, a little bit of history, just a little tiny bit. Mm-hmm. But the way I think about it, cultural gender expectations fall into a category of they relate to what I think of as tribal or collective survival. And they're rooted in a very long history. And when I say history, I don't mean the last 5 or 10,000 years. I mean the last 100,000 years, prehistory to us, that, you know, tribal societies generally were smaller groups, but even as they got bigger, compete for resources. And, you know, there are certain tasks that fall to men and fall to women. A binary gets created around functions. For men, one of the tasks is the warrior task, the defender of the community. And so men are socialized to be good at fighting, good at, you know, being strong, being dominant, being forceful, being fearless, being willing to deal with violence, being mindful of violence. It's a mindset that has been socialized into men for so long that it's become an unconscious assumption about men. Men and boys are socialized to see themselves as potential, if not actual, warriors. And a lot of what we call masculinity, if you look closer at it, are actually the traits that would make for good warriors, warriors and providers. So when we look at our culture, we're looking at a situation in which we have inherited for thousands and thousands of years. Assumptions, unspoken, unconscious assumptions about how men should be. And we, you know, in that comes a binary. Women are victims, have to be protected. Men are perpetrators, and if men do have violence directed at them, the idea that comes in with that is not that men are victims of violence. See, men are warriors. Men are heroes who take on violence for the benefit of the broader society. You know, in this context, war making is a tool of collective survival. And it's highly valued. So the men's role as warriors is highly valued. The stigma comes in when men are seen as failing in that task, that we encourage men to be aggressive and dominant and forceful because of the archetypal mindset of the warrior. And we don't focus so much with men on their function as husbands and fathers and parents and members of the community. But in terms of intimate relationships, a different set of values is called for, which we have traditionally assigned to women to, shepherd, to take care of, to take charge of. Men's primary role as the defender has blocked out men's roles as lovers and as parents and as caretakers of the family and the hearth, and we've taught men to disregard, even be ashamed of, their needs for intimacy, their vulnerability. Consider vulnerability in a context of a warrior frame. A warrior needs to transcend vulnerability, needs to be fearless, and tune out emotional content that gets in the way of his functioning as a warrior. So we socialize men to disregard their inner life, disregard emotions, disregard inner process, disregard feelings.
So what has happened in this process is that it has caused men not to speak up when they themselves become victims of violence.
If a man
not just sexual violence, but physical and verbal abuse. And I felt it was very, very important that we talk about that and lend support and discuss signs. And if there are, we have a huge male following when we look at our statistics and data. So a lot of men watch this show. And if there's one that may be watching today, I want to encourage them to speak up and to speak out about this because, you know, I remember some years ago when I was working in a organization and there were concerns, discussion within a healthcare institution that one of the employees' wife was beating on him. Now, we didn't have any proof of anything like that, but you know, rumors were floating around because he would come to work and then he would have a bruise here, a bruise there, and he'd always somewhat make an excuse to different ones that, oh, I, you know, hit it playing basketball, you know, something considered appropriate how you could bruise yourself. But right. There was a underbelly of people wondering if it was something more going on.
Right.
But he himself would never admit to it at the time. Oh. So, how do we change that? You know, how do we get men from being in a place of fear to, or embarrassment, shall I say, more than anything, especially if it's a man and a female, a woman that's right. doing it? Because like you said, the men are considered the more aggressor, and then sometimes embarrassment can come if a female have attacked, you know, a man,
shame.
Or put him in a you know, in a violent situation or even verbal abuse, you know.
Right. We not only have fear and shame, we have fear of shame.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I have worked with many men over the years, and I've heard men who've been in combat say that the fear of shame is greater than the fear of death.
Wow.
The fear of shame is greater than the fear of violence. Shame is a very deep, painful emotion. And
wow.
Most of us are extremely motivated to avoid it. So that when you mentioned, you spoke in terms of how do they avoid fear or how do they avoid embarrassment, I would suggest that what we need to do is how do we embrace the fear and transcend it? In other words, we need courage and bravery,
yes.
But not necessarily only to fight, to face, you know, physical assault, but we need bravery to face the pain of our own internal emotional experience. And we need resources, we need public education, we need training and emotional education to learn how to cope with our inner life, our inner landscape.
Is there a link to, and I'm just asking the question, but in your working with men and domestic assaults, have you found that this is linked to childhood or issues that happened early on, that it's kind of a pattern of some sort? Maybe it was something that triggered early on in life that made them gravitate to certain individuals? Because sometimes when you look at sexual assaults and sexual issues, it's something that happened way back in the childhood when you begin to unpack it and look at it to present day. Do you find there's something somewhat of a link to how the behavior has formed or of an acceptance of this or tolerance of this?
Well, very much so, Sharon. And think about what I said earlier, that this is a normalized pattern. What we find in families is that, generally speaking, fathers direct more physical assault and violence towards their boys than their girls. The idea that we often have towards boys is that they should encounter and learn how to fight, deal with violence. They witness their fathers not just abusing them, but they witness their fathers directing violence towards their mothers, towards their partners. You know, they learn not only as a trauma process, and there is an underlying trauma experience for many boys, but there's also a normalized expectation that this is how you should behave, that this is the normal and healthy way for men to assert dominance in their lives. So that to get down to a mindset where we can embrace this idea as trauma, we have to get through the mindset that says, this is how I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. This is my better self. We need a new model of gender relationship. You know, we hear a lot of talk in relation to gender, of binary and non-binary. I've been talking about a binarized male-female picture with respect to violence and intimacy. And I think we are as a culture moving towards a more non-binary model of how men and women interact with each other, where men also take responsibility for and tune into their own inner experience. There's often shame around this. So one approach is to address the public messages and tone down the shaming that happens towards men and include messages of acceptance. But the other side of it is to inform, educate men to have a different relationship with their inner experience of shame, mm-hmm. to transcend shame, to challenge it, to not necessarily give in. Every time something that I do is shamed by others and makes me feel some degree of shame inside. We have examples of this. We have a lot of people who are challenging binary relationships and they get shame directed at them. Mm-hmm. And many of them show a great deal of courage in standing up to it and saying, no, this is how I am. I choose to be more sensitive. I choose to be more aware. I choose to listen to my inner life. And I know that even though I'm a man, it's still valuable and important. We have to teach our boys that. When I was working with boys around sexual abuse, I taught them to view the challenge of transcending their shame as an expression of masculinity. Mm-hmm. Transcending shame takes bravery. It takes courage. And if we want men to be brave and courageous, that's one way to direct that message.
Very good. So what are some of the signs that, you know, maybe sometimes people don't even know that they're in, you know, a trapped situation, or they're suffering from the hands of domestic violence, whether it be from a female to male or male on male. You understand what I'm saying? Because it's not sexual in nature. It can be verbal. It can be physical. But you know, just like women, sometimes we make excuses, right? Well, he didn't mean it, or things of that nature. But what are some of the signs for that we can talk about to alert that there could be some potential, domestic issues that may be going on that may need attention or bring help in those situations? Because we know when those things continue to repeat, they oftentimes end up in death or tragedy of some sort. And we don't want that. We want, when the early signs are there, we want to be able to alert people that, hey, something is going on. Maybe there's a closer look that needs to be looked at to try to bring some help and support before it gets out of hand. So what would you say some of the early signs that could be potentially that there could be some sort of domestic violence going on?
Well,
or domestic abuse, let me call it that.
Domestic abuse. You know, we used to talk about domestic abuse, again, totally in terms of men battering women. But later research has shown that very often the battery goes both ways, but it's women who get hurt more.
Exactly. And we're focusing on the men today. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Men can also get hurt. You know, there are a number of signs I want to speak to. And they have to do, I'm going to break them down into two areas. There's the areas, the interpersonal connection between two partners, whether they're women or men. And also there's the relationship that a man has to his own body and his own inner life. And they're both relevant pieces of this. Now, in terms of the communication between people, one question is, are there barriers to communication? Are we able to say what we need to say to each other? Are there some things in the relationship that I have learned I don't dare say because the consequences are unacceptable? I can't deal with living with the consequences of saying these things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do I not dare bring up? Am I afraid of my partner?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Men can be afraid of their partner. And we make jokes about women as the battle axe, and there's a whole, bunch of jokes about that. But those jokes speak to the undercurrent of domestic violence against men that isn't necessarily so funny. Some men can be afraid of their wives, not just in terms of how they will be responded to emotionally and verbally. That can be deeply wounding to a man or woman, but also whether she will be physically assaulted. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily realize to the degree to which women are sometimes physically assaulted towards men, and men may fight back and may not fight back. Let me tell you a little anecdote. My wife used to make jokes when I would work with men victims of abuse of all sorts. She would make this joke. She would say, you never hear about a woman shooting her husband while he's doing the dishes. You know, her point being about men doing chores. And then one year I got called in to be an expert witness on a case in which a woman killed her husband while he was doing the dishes.
Really?
And it was literally. He was standing there doing the dishes and she stabbed him in the back. And then they brought in many other previous partners who reported she had been threatening to me. I was terrified of her. All of this under the radar. And this particular man had been warning people, but couldn't leave. He had warned people, but when this happened, the evidence was so overwhelming. And even then, there were people who didn't want to believe it. women not only use words, but also can use weapons. There's another, you know, there's an interesting point I want to make here about sexual dynamics in a marriage or in a relationship. One of the questions I've learned to ask men is, are you willing to say no to sex in a relationship? Because we live in a culture in which, along the lines I've been speaking, the expectation is that men must always be available for sex if a woman wants it. And there's a lot of shaming that can take place if a man, for whatever reason, doesn't want to have sex with a woman.
That's true.
So that becomes a cover for non-consensual sexual relationships. And people think about women forcing themselves on men sexually, or threatening men or blackmailing men into having sex. They may dismiss it, but it's a real thing. It happens. And part of the cultural support for that is the idea that men must always have sex if a woman wants it. So sometimes no is met with shaming and ridicule. And what kind of man are you? You know, that
or
all
undermines. Or punishment.
Mm-hmm. And that all undermines this whole concept of consent in sexuality. You know, what's the emotional tone of the relationship? Some relationships are fear-based relationships. Partners are afraid of each other. There's a tone of hostility, a tone of coldness in the relationship. That's generally a marker that there's some kind of underlying abuse going on. The person in the relationship might look at, why am I afraid in this relationship? What's going on here that makes it so I can't really be myself? Mm-hmm. The question I want to pose to people who want to raise this question is, in your relationship, do you have the kind of connection in which you can at least a significant amount of time experience each other as an emotional refuge? Can I really come to my partner with my hurt, with my wounding, with my vulnerability, and expect them to be there for me? Mm-hmm. Can they come to me and expect me to be there for them? Is there a place where we can really be open and vulnerable with each other and expect to be supported and held? I think without that presence in a relationship, that's an alarm. That's a cause for concern, where people have to keep things from each other, hide from each other. When the communication breaks down, it can come out in ways that are destructive. It comes out as hostile assaults. It comes out as name-calling. Name-calling, any level of name-calling, is a really bad sign in terms of the emotional interaction between people. Threats, correct. Any kind of threats.
I agree with that.
Are also signs. And of course, physical violence itself is a clear, clear marker. But those are communication, interpersonal markers. I also want to speak to some of the more self-relation markers for men. You know, the question for a man is, do I listen to my own body? Do I listen to my emotions? Do I ask myself, what's going on with me? And am I open to hearing internally what my emotional reality is? We so often socialize men to tune that out. We shame listening to your own emotional bodily sense. Okay, can I speak from myself? Can I articulate my emotional reality? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, in terms of what we need to do to combat the stigma and the shame, some kinds of resourcing makes it so people can speak for themselves. And a lot of men don't know how to speak to their emotional reality. Some degree of emotional education for men. You know, as a therapist, I find that often I need to offer some basic emotional education for men. What are the names of the emotional experiences you have? And how can you tell one from the other? And what is the difference between describing your emotional experience and trashing yourself, attacking somebody else, Can you just hold your experience, be with it, listen to it with compassion and with understanding?
So now we've talked about some of the signs to be aware of. How can they access help? What type of help? Is there specialized help for men where they can be in a safe zone, where they can be free to, you know, address these things? Obviously, in healthcare, when we run across cases, when we're taking care of patients or clients and so forth, we're mandated reporters of abuse, whether it's elderly, child, or any form of abuse, we should be reporting it, you know, to authorities and having an investigation go forward. But just for a layperson or somebody that is unsure, or somebody themselves is like, you know what, I want to get help, but I don't know how, or I want to break free. And again, it's just like females. Sometimes it's a cycle, right? You go back, they make up, they do things, they buy you gifts, they say beautiful things, it's not going to happen again, and here it goes again, right? It's same thing, cycle. It can be for men as well. So it can be a cycle of abuse where there's that makeup phase, that honeymoon phase, and we go back to it for a while, and then it goes again. And then sometime it heightens where the abuse becomes more aggressive, be it verbal or physical. And before you know it, it's out of control. So what are some things that we can tell the viewers how to get help? We're at the point of how can we get help? What can they do if they're in this situation, or they know of someone in this situation? What are resources that are available for them?
There are multiple levels of resourcing. You mentioned mandated reporting. I just want to say that mandated reporting is somewhat limited for many people because it applies to children, it applies to elderly people, it applies to people who have a disability. But many people who were thought of as able-bodied really don't have a mandated report that someone can call in on. Mm-hmm. But there are agencies. There are counselors and therapists who just provide family support, family counseling, couples counseling, domestic violence and intimate partner resources for families. And, you know, the profession is becoming more and more aware of the fact that men, as well as women, can be victims of assault. There are also organizations that are committed to public education and support for men around gender, masculinity, awareness, and self-care. I'll name a few of them. One organization that I have some personal connection with is called Men Healing. And this is an organization that focuses most on men as victims of sexual abuse, but it also offers more general gender-based information and education, because the dynamics of abuse don't confine themselves to sexual, non-sexual. They often, you know, bleed into different multiple categories. Mm-hmm. So there's Men Healing. There's something called the Men's Story Project. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but this is an organization where men are encouraged to write and examine their stories, their life stories, a way to look into how is my life moving, what's my process, and how do I understand myself as a man? There's often exploration of masculinity and gender issues in the Men's Story Project. There's an organization called One in Six. If you notice, you'll see them posting on YouTube. And this is an organization, again, that addresses men who are victims of sexual and non-sexual assault. And, you know, they can be called in. I suppose we might include their contact information.
I would love for you to do that. We want to share it in the bio link beneath that if anyone sees this and have some concerns, we want to be able to have access to that, as well as your information we're going to put on this link as well. Sure. Yeah. So as we're bringing this important conversation to a close, If you had to leave one final thought or something you wanted to convey to the men or the audience that is watching and listening today, the importance of this subject, what would you want them to take away from this conversation today?
There are two things. I tried to think of one, but I couldn't. There are two things that I think both are equally
important. Give us both of them. They're equally important.
One of them has to do with the importance of, for partners, listening with empathy. Listen to your partner. Both partners listen equally. Hear each other out. When I say listen, I mean just take in and accept what your partner says without judgment, without question, but with empathy and compassion. That's important. But the other thing that I want to say also, especially to men, it applies to all people in a broader sense, but in this sense, I want to say to men, I'm not going to say don't be afraid of being ashamed, but I want to say step up to shame, challenge it. Mm-hmm. It takes bravery. I know that shame is painful, but step up to it. Don't be ruled by the fear of shame for not conforming to some gender expectation, but step up to it, challenge, and let yourself feel and process out. Let yourself cry if you need to process out the pain of painful emotions, and question. That's the basic message. Just don't be ruled by shame. Question shame, challenge shame. It takes bravery, but it's worth it.
Well said. I want to thank you again, Eugene, for so bringing such an informed message today to our men. And I want to share with the men that are out there, if you are struggling or find yourself in a situation that is unhealthy, be it physical, be it verbal, whether it's with a partner, whether it's with anyone, male or female, or any gender or non-gender based, but where you are being abused, that there is help, as Eugene brought out, and there is support. And we at Living Your Life Without Limits want you to know, we want you to go forward. And as he beautifully brought out, don't be not only a fear of shame, but don't be embarrassed to take the step. Because sometimes that one step, even though you've been familiar, we can fall in love with anything when we become immune to it, doesn't mean it's always good for us. But there's a beautiful life that's for you, free of violence, because no one, male, female, child, young, old, any ethnicity, should have to suffer from the hands of verbal or physical or mental abuse, because sometimes it's mental and emotional as well. It doesn't always, sometimes that is even more detrimental than it is the actual physical assault itself, or sexual assault. So we will put that information on the link below, and we will also have information put on our Living Your Life Without Limits free resource section as well, hotlines for you, because we love you here. We have a huge male audience, and I want to bring information to encourage them as well, because we're concerned about all individuals, all walks of life, all cultures. We want everyone to live their life without limits. And as I'm closing, I want to thank again my special guest with his information today. What a powerful information that he brought to shed some light. And we will definitely have him back again to dig a little bit deeper on another subject matter, such as sexual assault and abuse, at a later segment time. And always, thanking you, our viewers and listening audience. Because of you, we bring fresh knowledge every week. And as I'm getting ready to end, as I always do, remember, family, to love yourself. Take care of yourself. Because guess what? You are 100% absolutely worth it. And don't forget to check us out on our YouTube station. If you haven't already done so, click and subscribe. Leave us a comment. I want to hear from you about this particular subject. Let us know, were we on the right track? Did we say something here? Did Mr. Eugene Porter bring you something that was helpful, that shedded some light and brought some courage to you? Because it's such an important subject today. I'm excited that we were honored to bring this forward, because I want to remove the shame and I want people to be free and liberated. And again, thank you. And we'll see you next week. Bye for now.